Hello, and welcome to the JSGC Policy Podcast, where we research policy issues that matter to the people in Pennsylvania.
Today, our conversation will focus on higher education information disclosure in the Commonwealth. I'm Susan Elder. I'm here with our executive director at Joint State, Glenn Passowitz.
Hello, Susan.
We're also here with Brian DeWalt, who is our sound engineer. And today, Brian is also here as a project manager for what I'm going to call the Snyder Report. Brian, can you give us the full technical name of the report that you work on?
Hi, Susan. I'm here today to talk about the instructional output and faculty salary costs of state-related universities.
Thank you, Brian. We're also joined today by Allison Kobzowitz, who staffs and is the project manager on the other higher education information disclosure study that Joint State puts out. Allie, can you give us the official name of that report?
Sure. So what we colloquially call the STAIRS report, the official title is the Information Disclosure of the State-Related Universities.
If you're listening, you just heard the official titles, and they do summarize the content of these reports. But you can understand why within the office we call them STAIRS and Snyder. Essentially, we refer to the reports by the names of the gentlemen who sponsored the original legislation, but we'll talk more about that in a minute. So our focus today is on higher education, but it's on higher education transparency. It's on information and data gathered from higher education institutions within the Commonwealth. Glenn, can you give us a bit of broad information about the STAIRS and Snyder reports?
Sure. These are two annual reports of revenues and expenses, teaching and administrative staff, student enrollments, and other data elements that we'll hear about. The Snyder report that Brian will discuss used to include both the state-owned and the state-related universities, and at this point contains only the state-related university information. Allie's report, the STAIRS report, has only been done by the state-related universities. The Snyder report dates to the early 1970s and the STAIRS report to the late 1990s.
Thanks, Glenn. So a quick clarification, when you say state-related, we're talking Pitt, Penn State, Temple, and Lincoln, so four institutions. But when you say state-owned, then you're talking the PASHI institutions.
Such as Millersville, Mansfield, Cheney, Westchester, Edinburgh, Indiana.
Bloomsburg.
Right, that group of universities.
Thanks for that clarification. Can you give a little bit of background about how these reports first started and when they were first published?
Sure. Let's start with the Snyder report because it's the older one. And the actual genesis of the instructional output and faculty salary costs of the state-related and state-owned universities was almost lost to history, if not for this podcast. Way back in December 1972, Senator Richard Snyder, hence the Snyder Report, represented the 13th District, and he sponsored amendments to the then three state-related universities appropriations acts that required a report to be made to the governor and the Senate and the House Appropriations Committees. That report was due in 1973. And then there was a second round of reports that were required, again by amendment, to the 1973 Appropriations Acts. And both of those reports were required in relatively short order, the first one in December of 73, and the second one in December of 74. Now, in April of 1975, Joint State released its first Snyder report, and that included the 1972-73 data and the 1973-74 data. Notice that I mentioned the three state-related universities because it wasn't until 1972 that Lincoln was made a state-related university. So Lincoln was first required to report the Snyder data in 1975. So this actually solved a long-standing mystery for us because for many years, we believed that our original Snyder report had been lost. And as it turns out, the oldest Snyder report on our website happens to be the first one that we released. And there was also confusion about which years the first report covered. So this clarified it that it was the 72-73 academic year started the data collection for the Snyder report.
So if you actually want to go back and get the oldest Snyder report data available, you could go onto Joint States website?
Yes, correct.
Okay, clear enough. So you're just talking about the state-related institutions, but didn't you mention earlier that the Pashi schools were also involved with this?
This is something that was new to me because I had always thought that the Pashi schools and the state-related were all included in Snyder, but it turns out that the state-owned universities weren't required to report until June of 1976. So up until 1982, a requirement that they report the data was repeated each year in their appropriations bill. It wasn't set as a standard. It was something that was always added in each year. But then in 1982, the public school code of 1949 was amended, and that then required that the state-owned universities report their data every year rather than repeat the language with each year's appropriations bill.
What was the motivation to start these reports initially?
The reason is given in the introduction in that original first report that we have on the website, and I'll read that. It's, quote, "The Snyder amendments reflect the legislature's concern with the ever-increasing appropriations request by Pennsylvania State University, the University of Pittsburgh, and Temple University, and the not readily explainable differences among the universities. Specifically, the reporting initiated in the Snyder amendments deals with information concerning the number of students, faculty, student credit hours, faculty workload, and salaries for all programs except the medical program." So it was a call for transparency going all the way back to 1972.
Thank you, Glenn. The Pashi schools aren't in the Snyder report anymore, though. Can you explain to me, Brian, what happened and why that is?
Sure, Susan. So Act 50 of 2020 led to a huge change in the way that Joint State prepared Snyder, because after 44 years of annual reporting, the Pashi institutions were no longer required to report any data to us. So for many years, dating to at least the 1990s, the Pashi schools had been lobbying against the reporting requirements. They felt that this annual reporting took a lot of time and was burdensome. And in the early 2000s, it was said that they were maintaining separate data systems just to report the Snyder data to us because the rest of the accounting system had moved on to meet other obligations the schools had. So today, the Snyder report continues to include the four state-related universities. And this 2024 edition will be the 49th consecutive year it's been released to the public. And coincidentally or not, several bills have been introduced over the past two legislative sessions that would require Pashi institutions to again report the data elements to us, similar to that required in the original Snyder.
Thank you, Brian. Okay, at this point, we have been talking about the origin of the Snyder report. We are going to switch from Snyder to the STAIRS report. Allie, can you tell us a little bit about the origin of the STAIRS report?
Yeah, sure, Susan. So the STAIRS report, which is referenced as STAIRS because it had been seen as a companion to Snyder, was initiated by Representative Jess STAIRS, who represented the 59th House District from 1977 to 2008. It has a much shorter story. The data reporting for what became the information disclosure of the state-related universities was initiated with the institution's 1994 appropriations bills. The inaugural report was released in March 1996, and the reporting requirements were included in each institution's annual appropriations bill until Act 61 of 2008, when it was added along with the Snyder report requirements to the public school code. The purported reason for the report was to help determine whether favoritism was impacting who received contracts entered into by the state-relateds, although this was a little more than hearsay at the time.
Thank you, Allie, for that background. And the entertaining thing about the STAIRS report to me is that the STAIRS report is what I was hired to Joint State initially to do when I first started. That was the reason I was brought on. And I have to do the shout out. Glenn, were you initially hired?
I was, yeah, I was brought on just to do the first STAIRS report, December 1st, 1995. So then for that 1996 report, yeah.
So the entertaining thing to me is that of the four of us sitting here talking about these reports, we have all hacked at them at some point in our career. So now we are going to switch back to the Snyder report. And Brian, can you give us just a broad picture of what is included in the Snyder report?
Sure, Susan. The Snyder report includes, for each of the state-related universities, lengthy lists of data elements related to the academic missions of those universities. So for example, there's tables showing the number of students broken down by major and whether they're upper and lower division, whether or not they're graduate students, what type of graduate program like PhD or master's. And there are tables that show the numbers of each rank, like instructors, professors, and assistant professors. There are tables that show how many hours per week they're teaching classes and working with students, tables showing the instructor's salaries and average salaries related to the subjects they're teaching, and figures for cost per student per topic. It shows the tuition and fee revenues related to students and the appropriations. This report is the only place in the state where you can get this information, and there are people that look for it every year.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, in addition to kind of being this transparency, higher education information disclosure stuff, this is actually higher education productivity measures that are reported in Snyder.
That's absolutely correct, Susan.
So that was Snyder. Let's switch back to the STAIRS report. Allie, can you give us some information about what's contained in STAIRS?
Sure. The STAIRS report is a lot less complicated. So it presents the overall revenue and expenditure. And one way it does this is breaking it down the number and average salaries for faculty by department and the number and average salaries for staff by department. It also shows revenue and expenditures. We do a comparison from the previous year to the current year. And then we also show those expenditures by academic unit. And it also shows information about the goods and service contracts, and the schools give us the data on every vendor that has a contract for over $1,000. And that's included in the report. We have kind of four different ways that we present that information. We present it by the location, so either in Pennsylvania or outside of Pennsylvania, the academic unit, and then the size of the contracts, and by expenditure type. So there are a couple different ways we break that down to present it in the report.
Allie, before we move on, can you give our listeners a little idea of what that contract information looks like? So we're talking really some massive institutions, some massive businesses. What does the data look like as it comes to you as an analyst?
So before my time, when Glenn and Susan were working on these reports, they were getting stacks of hard copy books about the size of telephone books with all this contract information. It's much easier for me. We get an Excel spreadsheet. It's long. It's a lot of rows, maybe like 5,000 or something. But thankfully, Excel has made things a lot easier, where we can just sort this stuff pretty quickly and be able to pull out information by, you know, various filters. And so we just get maybe six or so spreadsheets, and we're able to take that information a lot more simply than back in the day, I imagine.
I feel the need to clarify that, at least for me, the information always came at least electronically as well. I can't speak to Glenn's era.
Well, actually, I can. So in going back, I'm not entirely sure how information was submitted in the beginning. By the time I started in 1996, we were getting data on floppy disks. So we were getting both a floppy disk and these massive bound books of contract data. I presume prior to then, it was coming only as hard copy, you know, back before there were desktop computers. I do remember how one of the original Snyder Report staff, that's Fran Fauner, if she's out there listening, she would check all of the Snyder data by using a desktop adding machine. And she would go down each column in each report in each table, typing each number line by line to make sure that all the figures worked out correctly. And this was even after we had been using Excel to do all the math. Then Deb Reese, who is our administrative assistant, she would create each table manually in a word processing program. And Jim Fry, who was one of our economists, would get out a ruler and make sure that each column and each line was exactly aligned the way it should be. When I started with the Stairs report, at that point, then you realize we had about four people working on it. Jim, Franny, Deb, and me. And nowadays we have two. Allie handles the Stairs report data, and Wendy Baker, who's our administrative person, does all of the formatting in Word and Adobe Acrobat. Brian handles the Snyder report data, and Wendy does all of the formatting for that one.
I was just going to add a shout out to Wendy Baker. We might not get out the rulers anymore, but a lot of work does go into making sure everything is beautiful and perfectly aligned still. So just wanted to recognize her efforts.
Absolutely.
Brian, are there any insights you can share with us as far as this year's Snyder report?
I collect the majority of the data I work with from Snyder around late summer, and I really appreciate all the efforts of the research directors and fiscal analysts who prepare this data for me. We email back and forth in case there's ever questions I might have about the data they're giving me. They're very forthcoming, and I'm grateful for their time. So I do have some figures today that we can discuss from the 2022-23 fiscal year. For these state-related universities, overall, they serve the full-time equivalent of 150,000 students. And I'd say around 17% of these students are doing graduate-level coursework. Now, there's an overall trend in the number of full-time equivalent students that has been dropping, in some cases quite substantially since I took over this report. And it averages about to 2% decline a year over the last 5 years. And the students from the state-related institutions have earned 39,000 degrees last year. I would say this number has been dropping, but slowly, about 1% a year. Information on teacher work weeks that we present in this report is, I'd say, one of the more controversial tables. Before it was amended, so we no longer had to do the PASHE schools, I heard a lot of flack from the educators in my family who had to do the hourly reporting requirements, and they would give me an earful about how there's no such thing as an average teacher week, because much like being a student, there's a bit of a rhythm to teaching. So a work week can look vastly different depending on the time of the year you're measuring. So finals can be quite a bit different than close to the start of the school year. But I would say on average, there are fewer full-time employees overall at these schools, and they're spending slightly less time with the students as time goes on, and less time researching as well. And a bit more of their time is being taken up by supporting their schools, their institutions. So right now, the data looks like an average of 49 hours a week. At these universities, there's the full-time equivalent of 9,000 educators working and being paid an average of $80,000 a year. On other sections of the report, I would say it typically costs about $3,700 per student to teach a lower division class, and that over the last 5 years, this has gone up on average 2% a year. And one of the potential reasons for this, I think, is class sizes are shrinking for a lot of these schools. The average is 25 students per class, and it's been shrinking by about 1% a year. So that's what I do with the data that I collect in late summer. After everything's been calculated in most of the tables of this report, I follow up again with these schools in winter to get up-to-date information on the tuition and fees that they collect from students and to double-check the amount of appropriations that they've received from the Commonwealth. For this last year, I'd say that Commonwealth appropriations for these universities have not risen since 2019 to 2020 fiscal year. So while some of the schools have held off on big tuition increases during the height of the pandemic, some have now had to make dramatic adjustments. And finally, in the back of the report, there are tables for people that are interested in comparing year-to-year data for each of these institutions.
Thanks, Brian. Allie, would you like to talk a little bit about this year's STAIRS report?
Sure. So we have some more simple information that's being tracked, I think, for the STAIRS report with the revenue and expenditures. We do, as I mentioned earlier, that comparison of the previous year to the current year. And when we did that, we saw that Lincoln's revenue had gone down by 21%, which is a significant figure compared to the rest of the schools I'm going to mention. But their expenditures have gone up just a little bit, almost 2%. Penn State's revenue went up by 6.9%, and their expenditures went up by 8.4%. In the revenue and expenditure section, we also find benefits as a percentage of salaries and wages. And also, we look at travel as a percentage of the total expenditures. Benefits as a percent of salary and wages hover between 30 to 35% at Penn State for most academic units, although there are some outliers on the higher or the lower end of that. Pitt had a revenue increase of 4.2% and an expenditure increase of 4.4%. And similar to Penn State, their benefits as a percent of salaries and wages was mostly between 30 and 35 for different academic units. Lastly, Temple had a 0.8% decrease in revenue and a 0.4% increase in expenditures. And their employee benefits as a percentage of salaries and wages was a little bit lower, hovering mostly between 25 and 30%. For the contract data, like I said, there are a lot of different ways that we sort that. It's a little bit difficult to talk about those sortings in this medium, but pulled the in-state and out-of-state information. So for Temple, they use mostly in-state contracts, with 57.3% of their contracts being in Pennsylvania. Pitt used 31.7% in-state contracts, Penn State used 48.4%, and then Lincoln used 39.6%. And if you want to look, it is kind of interesting to go through and look and see the amounts of some of these contracts. We have those listed by size, so you can see the largest ones in the report.
Thank you, Allie, for that briefing. It's time for us to wrap up our conversation today. Thank you for joining us, Allie, and also for Brian for jumping over, and both of you for speaking about your reports. If you're listening and you'd like to get more details, both of these reports are so numbers and detail oriented that it's easier to see them visually, and you can get a copy through our website. The information also goes to PDE and is on PDE's website. The link to our website is below in the show notes.
The music in our podcast is provided by Joseph McDade. Thanks for listening and have a nice day.